Azov had been pushed to his knees in the middle of the boat shop. It had been hard to get Rat to come into the dock shop, but he'd done it. Now Rat's foot was squarely in the middle of the noose. Azov had lain on the floor. But Azov couldn't move. He couldn't draw full breath. Rat was inches away, terrifying in his nakedness. Azov tasted blood. He found himself moving. He grabbed the noose and snugged the knot tight against Rat's ankle.
You little rat fuck!
Rat raised his knee sharply into Azoth's face. He landed on the big rock and scraped his back, falling between the rock and the hole in the floor where boats had once been lowered into the river's foul waters. He scrambled and braced his thin arms against the rock and lifted his eyes, expecting the older boy already to be on him. Rat looked at Azoth, at the hole, at the rock, at the rope, at his ankle. Azoth would never forget the look in Rat's eyes. It was terror. Then Rat lunged, and Azoth shoved the rock into the hole. The rope went tight, and Rat was pulled to the side in mid-lunge. He scrambled, grabbing for Azoth, missing. His fingers raked the rotting wood floor as he slid and disappeared into the hole. Azoth walked to the edge of the hole. Rat was holding on by his fingertips. It was impossible. Then Azoth saw that his rock had landed on one of the lattice-like support beams that held the shop up over the river. It was balanced precariously, but as long as Rat held tension on the rope, it wouldn't drag him into the depths. Azoth walked to Rat's pile of clothing and found his dagger.
No!
Tears were coursing down Rat's pink cheeks. He squatted by Rat, careful but fearless. Even now, Rat's arms were shaking from holding his weight. He was too fat to hold himself for long, too fat to let go with one hand and grab Azoth. With a quick motion, Azoth grabbed his ear and sliced it off. Rat let go. His body hit the rock, dislodged it. The last thing Azoth saw was his terrified face as he was pulled under the water. Then, even that was obscured by his hands churning, reaching for something, anything, finding nothing. Azoth waited and waited and then staggered away. The pimples were gone. He'd grown a beard to cover the few pits they'd left. The build was right, though he'd lost weight since he left the Warrens, but that jaggedly cut ear and his eyes.
Gods! How didn't I notice those dead eyes?
The eyes were the same.
Rat.
Kyler's plan burst into a thousand shards. His heart stopped. He felt like a child again, waiting in line for Rat to beat him, too cowardly to do anything but weep.
I'm dead, right? Funny, that's what they told me about you. Neff burned off my other ear to punish me for what you did. You cost me 3 years, Azoth. 3 years before I became Guildhead again. I held my breath for... gods, it seemed like forever. Forever working at the knot you tied on my ankle. Bleeding my life out in that filthy water until Neff finally pulled me out. He watched the whole thing. Said he was debating letting me die. Neff had to kill one of my bigs. You remember Roth, don't you? And put him in my place before your master came. I had to move to some shitty guild on the opposite side of the Warrens and start all over. You almost made me fail my father.
Rat was shaking with rage. He exposed his melted ear again.
This was the least of my punishments. And then you conveniently died. I never believed it, Azoth. I knew you were out there just waiting for me. Believe me, if I had time, I would torture you for years. I would push you to the end of human endurance and beyond. I'd heal you just to make you hurt again. But I don't have that luxury. If I leave you alive, my father might come up with other plans for you. He might do something else with the Kakari. I paid for that Kakari. And I intend to bond it immediately. Any last words?
Kyler had lost his focus, gotten distracted. Fear and horror had made his mind wander from the puzzle. when nothing should have been as important. Durzo had taught him better. Fear was to be acknowledged, then ignored. Where had he been? Devourer? Magic?
Shit. Boring, but accurate enough.
Roth's grip turned on his sword, and his shoulder rolled back. The blade was coming up. The man was going to cut his head off. Everything in Kyla cried out for help. Kyla felt the burst of magic wallop his stomach like a thundercrack. His vision went blue, white with magic. He could see the magic streaming through the air as fast as an arrow, a wall of magic. The castle itself rocked and everyone fell. Everywhere he looked, Kyla saw the same stunned looks. Roth was sprawled on the stairs, his sword still in his hand, mouth wide. Kyla suddenly felt one of the magic bonds holding him snap. He looked toward the others and saw that the magic looked like a storm of blue-white rain falling sideways, flying invisibly through walls and people, was spattering against the bonds, collecting around them. The bonds were as black as the witch's veer, and the blue magic hissed and spat wherever it touched the black. Then the blue magic latched onto the witch's magic and roared up the black tendrils like wildfire, climbing a hill to the witches holding them. Bonds holding Kyla disappeared as three living blue torches lit the room. But Kyla's eyes were drawn to himself. The Kakari was covering him like a black skin, and everywhere the blue magic pelted him, the magic danced like a puddle in the rain, then disappeared, and the Kakari swelled more powerful. The Devourer ate magic, too. Then the magical shockwave was gone.
Get him!
Incredibly, the witches obeyed instantly. Bonds leapt into place around Kyla's arms and legs. Everywhere the bonds touched Kyla in response to his will, the Kakari swelled, twisted through them, shifted, sucked, and devoured them. Kyla threw himself back against the bonds even before they were completely dissolved. He burst through them with all the strength of his talent as Roth's sword slashed the air inches from his throat. Kyla landed below the second flight of steps, flat on his back. Even as he slid across the floor, his sword was moving. Highlander stood to the left and right of him, and his sword flashed twice. Others were already attacking. Kyla flipped his feet over his head and stood, ready to fight. Solin tried to climb down from the statue. King Logan Verdroken had been one of the earliest kings of Cenaria, perhaps mythic, and Solin couldn't remember what he'd done. For all that, it must have been heroic to have Regnus Gaia name his son after him, and he must have been special to get a statue of such size, holding his sword aloft in defiance. Solin had chosen it not for its metaphoric significance, but simply because he wanted every Meister in the garden to see him. Every Meister that had used Veer within 500 paces in the few seconds he'd been able to hold Kurok was dead. Kurok laid on the stones beneath him. Fear was snatching it up and wrapping it in a blanket.
Solin! Solin, you must come down! Hurry!
Solin still felt as if he were on fire. Every vein in his body was tingling so fiercely it was hard to even feel Verdroken's stone sword under his fingers. Solin had perched on the dead king's shoulders and held on to the stone sword for balance, holding Kurok aloft the same way when he'd released the magic. He shifted his grip, his legs shaking, and suddenly fell. Fear didn't quite catch him, but at least broke his fall.
I can't walk. It was amazing, Fear. Such a tiny piece of what it can do.
Fear grabbed him and threw him over his shoulders as a lesser man might lift a child.
Oh, I got about 50 of them. Maybe 10 left. One on the East Bridge.
Solin was trying to remember what Dorian had told him. Something urgent. Something he hadn't let Fear hear.
Don't let Fear die. He's more important than the sword.
I'm going to have to set you down.
Don't worry, I'm not leaving you.
In outrageous hues of green and blue, Caladoran soldiers were swarming in front of the east gate. Solon couldn't even remember leaving the garden.
What?
Fear was using Kurok as a sword. Watching Fear with a sword was more than amazing. It was a privilege. Fear had always been a natural, deceptively quick, unbelievably strong, his movements as precise as a dancer's. In hues of green and blue and red, Fear demolished the soldiers. There was no extended swordplay. At most, each soldier had time to swing his own weapon once, miss or have it parry, and then die.
Go down!
When Solon tried to follow his gaze, the riot of colors was too intense. The big man lifted him, threw him over a shoulder again, and started running. Solon saw the wood of the bridge beneath Fear's feet.
Hold on tight!
But a moment too soon, Solon latched onto Fear's belt on either side of the man's broad back. Fear dodged to the side, and his great shoulders rolled. With his feet sticking out in front of Fear and his head merely bobbing along behind him, all Solon saw was a brief flash of Kurok. Fear spun, the right way so Solon wasn't flung off, and Kurok came up again. Then he was running full speed once more. Solon saw three bodies behind them lying on the bridge. The man had killed three men while holding Solon over his shoulder. Astounding.
Dorian told me our hope is in the water, but not to jump. Look for a rope.
Solon lifted his head as if he would be much help in finding a rope while bouncing on Fear's back. He didn't see a rope, but he did see a Meister behind them, conjuring a ball of witch fire.
Oh, damn you, Dorian! What goddamn rope? Down!
With the reflexes of the sword master he was, Fear dropped instantly. The witchfire burst against a dozen Caladoran soldiers holding the far gate in front of them. Solon went sprawling and was almost brained by one of the great fire pots that guarded the bridge. The old witch behind them, from his thickness of his veer, Solon guessed he was a Burgmeister, was drawing magic once more. Fear grabbed Solon's collar and threw him behind the fire pot. The move put Solon in a safe place, but exposed Fear. This time it wasn't witchfire, but something else Solon had never seen. An angry red beam didn't so much fly as streak through the air toward Fear. He threw up a magical shield and ducked. The force of the magic blew Fear's shield apart and flung him to the other side like a rag doll. Kurok spun from his grasp. Drawing on strength he didn't know he had, Solon grabbed Fear and pulled him into the shadow of the firepot with him. Two more Meisters were running to join the Burgmeister, and soldiers were behind them. The gate at the far end of the bridge opened and soldiers were pouring through. Fear sat up and looked out at Kurok, 20 feet away, exposed.
I can use it! I can save it!
No! You'll die!
The soldiers and the Meisters had paused, regrouping, advancing slowly now, cautious and orderly.
I don't matter, Solon. We can't let them have it.
You wouldn't even live long enough to use it, Fear. Not even if you were willing to trade your life for 1 second of power.
It's right there!
And so is this!
Solon motioned to the edge of the bridge. Fear looked.
You've got to be joking.
Over the edge, a black silk rope had been tied to the underside of either end of the bridge. It only extended out below them when the wind blew. Fear was looking not at the rope, but at the fall.
Hey, it's prophecy, right? It has to work.
It never works out exactly like Dorian says.
If he told you that you were going to do this, would you have come?
Hell no! And don't you nod knowingly to me. I get enough of that from Dorian.
Fear looked at the approaching soldiers and Meisters.
Right. You first.
He's going to go after Kurok, the heroic idiot.
I can't. I'm not strong enough to grab the rope. I'll die if I go alone.
Fear stood.
Oh, I'm crazy, and you're fat.
But he picked up Solon and put him on his back.
I've got a plan, and I am not fat.
For all that he second-guessed plans when they were all safe, Fear knew to obey in battle. He opened himself quickly, and Solon dipped into Fear's talon. He lashed himself onto Fear's back with magical barbs.
Now, jump!
Fear leaped over the side of the bridge. The rope was in the perfect place. Solon activated the other weaves. Holes were torn in the sides of each of the fire pots, and air inside them suddenly compressed, jetting the oil in the pots out onto the bridge. The last weave dropped a little spark in the middle of the oil. Fear had caught the rope with both hands and a leg. He immediately flipped upside down. Whoa! Sudden change in direction caught Solon's arm across Fear's shoulder and snapped it. If it weren't for the magical bonds holding him, he would have dropped like a stone. The rope, anchored on both sides of the bridge, first stretched, bowing downward toward the middle. Then the rope tore loose at the castle end. Fear came to the surface, and Solon thought dimly that the man was either a hell of a swimmer or something was dragging them out. Fear was on his knees in the shallows, holding up his hands. From his perch on the man's back, Solon saw that Fear's hands had been torn to bloody pieces by the rope. He could see bone.
You're better off than I thought you'd be.
Dorian, using magic, hauled them out.
Stop lollygagging, you two. We need to get going if we're going to make it to Calador in time.
Lollygagging?
Calador!
Well, that is where my bride is waiting. I can't wait to find out who she is. I think Kurok is going to find its way there, too.
Sometimes I really hate you, Dorian.
They came within the arc of his sword or the reach of his lashing feet or striking fists. Men went down like grain in a summer storm. To Kyler, who had always been gifted at fighting, battle suddenly made sense. The chaos unfolded into beautifully intricate interlocking and logical patterns. With his talent singing, Kyler was a virtuoso. He fought in a fine frenzy, a dancer possessed. Time never slowed, but he found his body reacting to sights he didn't consciously see, turning, dodging under blows his mind never registered, striking with the awesome speed and grace of that angel of death, the Night Angel. The Highlanders sought to overwhelm him by force of numbers. Their blades caught the air within an inch of Kylo's ear, within half an inch of his stomach, a quarter of an inch from his thigh. He rode the front of each beat, cut the margins closer and closer, until the bodies he was killing were being pushed forward instead of falling back and pressing in closer on him. He sheathed retribution and grabbed the hand holding a blade aimed at his belly and yanked a skinny Highlander across the circle to stab his fellow. Reaching around his own back with a knife, he diverted a sword thrust while his other knife found an eye socket. Two spears came for him, and he dropped to the floor, yanking both forward. As each impaled a body, he swung up, destroying another Highlander's face with a kick. Light as a cat, he sprang to the back of a man dying on his knees and vaulted off the shoulder of one of the impaled spear bearers. As he flipped sideways through the air, a ball of green witch fire the size of his fist streaked through the air. It caught his cloak and broke into pieces. He landed on his feet and ducked under a sword cut. His cloak burst into green flame. Kyler tore the cloak off as he dove between two spears. Holding one edge of the cloak, he came to his feet and wrapped the cloak around another of his attackers. Green flame raced for the man's skin, and there burned a fierce blue. Another ball of witchfire sizzled through the air, and Kylo dove behind one of the pillars supporting the high ceiling. Kyler had killed or disabled more than half the Caladorans, but now the others played to their strengths. Point, counterpoint.
To the captain! Keep a Meister in view!
Men streamed to the captain to form a wedge between Kyler and Roth, who had retreated to the throne to watch. But Kyler wasn't wasting his time as he stood in the protection of the pillar. He knew that if he wanted a chance at Roth, he had to kill the witches. Both of them were eyeing the spaces between the pillars where he would have to run. He pulled the Kakari in his hand, and keeping the feel of those fingers of magic in his mind, willed it to dribble down the length of his sword. Seeming to sense his urgency, the Kakari coated the steel instantly. Silk, Kakari, and steel shimmered out of visibility. Grabbing the edge of one of the long tapestries that cover the walls of the throne room, Kyla moved toward the pillar, but not before witchfire leaped from a witch's fingers.
Exuratigraf!
The flat of his blade hit the green globe of fire. Instead of bursting, the fire whooshed into the blade. Kylo dodged around a pillar with the tapestry in one hand and a sword now visible because of the green flame crackling through it. With all the strength of his talent, he leaped. He soared into the air in the midst of the throne room, and then as the tapestry met a pillar, it abruptly changed his trajectory and launched him up the steps. He hit the landing between the flights of stairs with 8 feet of burning tapestry in his hands. He hurled it toward the Highlanders and slashed at the witch not 2 steps away. The top of the witch's head opened, exposing his brain. The man spun, but his lips completed his incantation.
Expedas!
The thick black tendrils that had been squirming under the skin of his arms flattened grotesquely like rippling muscles and tore free of the witch's arms, bursting through his skin. Power roared from the dying witch, and he staggered, trying to find Kylo. He kicked the witch so hard that the man lifted off the ground and crashed into the Highlanders. Even as the black tendrils were tearing through the soldiers, Kylo felt more than saw the white light forming behind him. He turned in time to see the homunculus streaking through the air. It dodged under his desperate slash and stabbed tiny claws into his chest. He was already jumping to the side when he felt the concussion and saw the air ripple. Reality bubbled in a line toward him. The rippling air curved, following him as he ran. Then the air tore open.
Incendius Externa!
Pitworm lunged forward into reality, barely missing him. It thrashed, furious, tearing the hole open wider and hooking fiery claws around two of the pillars. Kylo ripped the homunculus from his chest and slapped it onto a soldier's face. As the pitworm lunged again, Kylo leapt straight up. Its lamprey-like mouth shot out, latched onto the screaming man, and sucked him back into the pit. By the time Kylo landed, both pitworm and soldier were gone. Kylo turned and jumped for the top of the stairs, but he was too slow.
Infernus Eternal!
Even as he left the ground, he saw a blur of light streaking toward him. There was no time to draw a throne knife. Kylo hurled his sword at the last witch. The bolt of magic blasted his left shoulder. As the momentum of his leap carried him up and forward, the blast made him flip end over end backward. He crunched into the marble floor at the foot of the throne and felt his left knee shatter. For a long moment, his eyes refused to focus. He blinked and blinked and finally cleared the blood away. He saw retribution buried to the hilt through a witch 10 paces away, its blade black with his Kakari. He realized that he was viewing the dead witch through a pair of legs. His eyes followed the legs up to Roth's face.
Stand up!
He plunged his long sword through Kyla's lower back. Roth twisted the blade in his kidney. Then the hot metal lifted away. Something pulled Kyla to his feet. The pain was like a cloud making everything fuzzy and indistinct. Confused, Kyla stared at the dead witches.
All the Aethlings of God King Ursul are switchboard. Didn't you know?
Kyla stared at Roth dumbly. Roth was talented. The invisible hands released him, and he folded as he put weight on his destroyed left leg.
Get up!
The pain flashed in another bar through his stomach as Roth stabbed him again. He must have picked Kylo up again, because Kyla felt his head lolling to one side. If he'd felt pain before, now it became agony. Every part of his body was being scoured with fire, dipped in alcohol, packed with salt. His eyelids were lined with crushed glass. His optic nerves were being chewed by little teeth. And after his eyes, every tissue, sinew, muscle, and organ marinated in misery in its turn. But his mind cleared. Kyler blinked. He was standing before Roth, and he was aware. Aware and dismayed. He must have landed on his left knee when he'd crashed to the marble, because it was demolished. He was bleeding inside, his intestines leaking slow death into his viscera, stomach acid scorching his intestines, a kidney pouring black blood. His left shoulder looked like it had kissed a giant's hammer.
You won't die easy. I won't allow it. Not after what you've done. Look what you've done! My father will be furious.
There it was. He was dying. Kyla could perch unsteadily on his one good leg, but he had no weapons. His sword and the Kakari were 10 paces away, and they might as well have been across the ocean. No weapons. And Roth was, even now, careful not to come within range of his hands. Kyla didn't have so much as a belt knife.
Are you ready to die?
Kyla was staring at his right hand. Of all the beaten, sliced, and smashed places on his body, his fingers were healthy. Perfect. Wasn't that the hand he'd cut on the window last night?
I'm ready.
Any regrets?
Kyler looked into Roth and understood him. Kyler had always had enough darkness in his soul to understand evil men. Roth was trying to wring anguish from him. Roth wanted to kill him while he thought of all the things he hadn't done. Roth reaped despair.
Dying well is easy. It only takes a moment of courage. It's living well that I couldn't do. What's death compared to that?
You're about to find out.
Kyler smirked and then smiled as rage washed over Roth.
Killing Logan was more fun.
He rammed his sword into Kyler's chest.
Logan!
The thought cut through Kyler more cruelly than the sword in Roth's hand. Kyler had lived by the sword. Dying by it was neither unexpected nor unjust. But Logan had never even wanted to hurt anyone. Roth killing Logan wasn't right. It wasn't fair. It wasn't just. Kyler stared at the steel stabbed through his chest. He took Roth's hand in his own and pulled himself up the sword, impaling himself to the hilt.
What are you doing?
I am the Night Angel. This is justice. This is for Logan.
The Kakari leaped for Kyler's hand and was caught squarely by Roth. Triumph lit his eyes. Kyler grabbed Roth's shoulders and stared him in the eye.
I am the Night Angel. This is justice. This is for Logan.
Kyler lifted his right hand. Roth looked confused. Then he looked at his left hand. The Kakari was turning to liquid, gliding through his fingers. His hands scrambled as they'd scrambled across the wood floor of the boat shop and found nothing. The Kakari slapped into Kyler's palm and formed an enormous punch dagger on his fist. Kyler slammed his fist into Roth's chest. Roth looked down, his disbelief turning to horror as Kyler drew the dagger out.
No! I can't die!
Roth and Kyler lay eye to eye on the marble at the foot of the throne, staring at each other. Each trembled as uncontrollable twitches ran through his limbs. Roth's eyes brimmed with fear, panic so intense it paralyzed. He seemed to no longer see Kyler lying inches away. His gaze grew more distant and filled with soul-deep terror. Kyler was content. This Night Angel had apportioned death and death was his portion. It wasn't nice, but it was just. This sentence was deserved. Watching Roth's eyes finally glaze in restless death, Kyler wished there was something more beautiful to find in death than justice. But he didn't have the strength to turn away from this life, this death, this terrible justice. Then, someone turned him over. A woman. She came into focus slowly. It was Aline. She pulled Kyler into her lap, stroked his hair. Kyler couldn't see her scars. He reached a hand up, touched her face. She was angelic. Then he saw his hand. It was perfect, whole, and amazingly unbloodied. For the first time in his life, his hands were clean.
Clean.
Death came. Kyler yielded. Tara Grayson had just paid a fortune to one of the prettiest men she'd ever seen. Jarl said he spoke for the Shinga, but he carried himself with such assurance, she wondered if he might not be the Shinga himself. She hadn't liked handing over so much money to the Sakage, but she hadn't had any choice. The God King's army would arrive with the dawn, and she'd already spent too long in the city. The coup had not gone according to the God King's plan. The Caladorans controlled the bridges, the castle, and the city's gates, but some of them had only skeleton crews. That would change when the rest of the army arrived, and Tara Grayson and her nobles needed to be gone when that happened. If she hadn't paid half her fortune to Jarl, she would have had to leave behind all of it. The queen made the hard decisions, and with everyone else dead, a queen was what she was now. It was midnight. The wagons were packed. The men were waiting. It was time. Tara stood outside her family's mansion. Like the other ducal families' homes, theirs was old, a veritable fortress, a looted fortress now. A looted fortress smelling of the barrels and barrels of oil they had poured in every room, over the precious heirlooms too heavy to carry, and into the grooves they'd cut in every centuries-old beam. It was time. Jarl's wet boys were supposed to slaughter the Caladorans holding the city's east gate at midnight. All the other nobles were huddled outside their own houses. From her elevated front porch, she could see some of them up and down Horak Street, waiting to see if she'd really do it. She locked the mansion in her mind. After she returned, she would rebuild this for her family, twice as splendid as before. Tara Grayson walked to the street and took the torch from Sergeant Gamble. The archers gathered around her. She personally lit every arrow. The mansion went up in flame. Fire poured from the windows and reached for the heavens. Queen Tara Grayson didn't book. She mounted her horse and led her column, a pathetic army of 300 soldiers and twice as many servants and shopkeepers, into the street toward the east gate. Across the east side, the great houses lit up one by one. They were the funeral pyres of fortunes. Not only were the nobles losing everything, but so too were all those who depended on them for their employment. But the fires of destruction were also beacons of hope. You may have won, Scenario was saying, but your victory is no triumph. You can force me from my home, but you will not live in it. I will leave you nothing but scorched earth. In response to those great fires across the city, smaller fires rose too. Shopkeepers set fire to their shops. Blacksmiths stoked their furnaces so hot they would crack. Bakers destroyed their ovens. Millers sank their millstones in the plith. Warehouse owners set fire to their storehouses. Livestock owners slaughtered their herds. Captains confined to the plith by witches' magic scuttled their own ships. Thousands joined the exodus. The trickle of nobles and their servants became a flood. The flood became a host, an army marching out of the city, marching in defeat, but marching. Some drove wagons, some rode, some walked barefoot with empty hands and empty bellies. Some cursed, some prayed. Some stared over their shoulders with haunted eyes. Some wept. Some left brothers and sisters and parents and children, but every one of Sonaria's orphaned sons and daughters carried a small, dim hope in their hearts. I shall return, it vowed. I shall return. Neff stood as far to one side as he could among the Meister's generals and soldiers waiting to greet God King Garoth Bursul as he rode across West Kingsbridge with his retinue. The God King wore a great ermine coat that accentuated the paleness of his northern skin. His chest was bare, aside from the heavy gold chains of his office. He was robust, thick-bodied, but muscular, vigorous for his age. The God King pulled his stallion to a halt before the courtyard gate. Six heads on pikes greeted him. The seventh pike stood empty.
Commander Gair!
Yes, my liege! My God, your holiness! Sire!
Things were not good. Though Roth's and Neff's plans had seemed to go without a problem, somehow the God King's armies had sustained far heavier losses than they'd planned. A boatload of Highlanders dead. Many of the nobles who ought to be dead escaped. Great swaths of the city aflame. The heart of Sonaria's industry and economy reduced to ashes. There was no resistance yet, but with so many nobles still alive, it would come. The Meisters that were supposed to have been a devastating spearhead into the heart of Modai were now dead. More than 50 Meisters dead at a stroke, without any explanation except rumors of some mage with more talent than anyone since Ezra the Mad and Jorsen Alcestes. The Karan invasion ended before it began. The God King's son murdered just as he completed his Ur-Thang. The Sakage would have to be brought to heel. Fires, literal and figurative, would have to be put out. Someone would have to answer for it. Nefdada was trying to figure out how to make sure it wasn't him.
Why is there an empty pike on my bridge? Anyone?
Commander Huron Gare shifted in his saddle, stupidly looking at the empty pike.
We haven't found the prince's, the pretender's, Logan Gaia's body yet, sire. We do know that he's dead. We have three reports confirming his death, but in all the fighting, we're working on it.
Indeed.
God King Ur-Sul didn't look at Huron Gare. He was studying the faces of the royal family above him.
And this shadow that killed my son, is he dead too?
Neff felt a chill at the quiet menace in the God King's query. When the Caladorans had first gone into the throne room, they thought some elite unit must have wiped out all the Caladorans in the room. But Neff had been able to revive a man who'd had his feet cut off. He swore he'd seen most of the fight before he passed out. It was one man. A shadow. The Night Angel, he called him. The story was already getting out among the men. A man who walked unseen, who could kill 30 Highlanders and 5 Meisters and one of the God King's own Aethlings. A man impervious to steel and to magic. It was nonsense, of course. With all the blood they'd found, the man must be dead. But without a body.
Someone dragged his body away, sir. We followed the blood trail through the hidden passages. It was a lot of blood, sire. If it really was just one man, he's dead.
It seems we have a lot of dead people without bodies, Commander. Find them. In the meantime, put up another head. Preferably one that looks like Logan Gaia's.
It wasn't fair. Ferl Kallias had been among the first Highlanders on Sonarian soil. He'd been one of the few to get off the burning, sinking barge, and that only because he'd had the wits to throw off his armor before jumping in, so he didn't drown like so many others had. He'd joined another unit and fought barehanded until he could arm himself from the Highlanders who died in the first assault on the courtyard. He'd personally killed 6 Sonarian soldiers and 2 nobles, 6 nobles if you counted children, which he didn't. And what had he been given to recognize his heroism? His cunning? The shit duty. Certain units were being given looting privileges. The good units on the west side, with the barbarians called the Warrens, and the best units looting the remains of the east side with the officers. Furl's unit was all dead. so he got assigned with clearing the rubble on the East Bridge. It wasn't only dirty, it was dangerous. The witches had extinguished the fire, but many of the planks were weak, some of them cracking or breaking if you stood on them. The pilings were fine. Sheathed in iron, they were impervious to the fire. But you couldn't stand on the pilings, so a fat lot of good that did. The worst part of the job was the bodies. Some of them were like seared steak, crusted black on the outside, but cracked and oozing inside. And the stench of burnt flesh and burnt hair. He was picking through the bodies, taking whatever looked promising, and dumping the bodies over the side of the bridge. Some of the units would be glad to have their dead back for proper burial, but Furl wasn't going to carry the damned sticking things across this bridge.
To the abyss with them.
Then he saw a sword.
What have we here?
It must have been under one of the bodies when the fire had started, because it was untouched. There wasn't even smoke damage on the hilt. It was a beautiful blade. The hilt carved with dragons. It was the kind of sword that befitted the leader of a warband, or a warlord. With such a sword, Furl's clan would hold him in awe. Awe he deserved. He was supposed to bring anything unusual he found to one of the Wurdmeisters.
Sure, after how well they've treated me.
Looking at the other men working on the bridge and seeing that none were watching, he drew his sword, set it aside, and slid his prize into its sheath. Not a perfect fit, but good enough for the moment. The hilt was a problem, what with those dragons, but he'd wrap leather bindings around it soon enough. He was good with his hands. Give him a few hours and this sword would look like any other. The sword brightened his outlook considerably. It wasn't really enough to repay his valor, but it was a start. The Meister walked down the last corridor to what the southern barbarians called Hell's Asshole. The nauseating, intoxicating wash of torment engulfed her. She missed a step and stumbled against the wall. The soldier accompanying her turned. He looked scared.
It's nothing.
The Meister walked to the grate covering the hole.
Decidus Lanterna.
A red light burned in front of her. The creatures in the hole squinted and shrank back.
Lanterna Fonata.
The light descended into the hole. She examined each prisoner. 10 men, 1 woman, and 1 simpleton with filed teeth. None of them could be the usurper. She turned, slightly dizzy, and walked out, trying not to flee. A minute later, a big man rolled out from an overhang carved in the stone. The woman looked at him and shook her head.
Ah, you're a fool! Nothing they could do to you would be as bad as staying here. Look at you! You're soft! The hole will break you, 13.
Logan stared at her flatly. A grimy woman with gaping holes in her dress, short a few teeth. The look on her face was the only thing approaching human kindness that was to be found in this hole.
Though all the detritus of humanity pass through this hole, and all the fires of perdition rise from it, I will not be broken.
You use a lot of big words, don't he?
The big man named Finn smiled a smile full of bloody gums, one of the first symptoms of scurvy, and wrapped his sinew rope back around his body.
Oh, load of meat on that big fucker. Really, real good.
Scurvy meant food deficiencies. Food deficiencies meant Finn had lived long enough to get sick from food deficiencies. Finn was a survivor. Logan turned his eyes to him and pulled out his knife. Literally his only edge against these animals.
Let me make this real simple. You will not break me. The hole will not break me. I will not break. I will not be broken.
What's your name, love?
Logan found himself grinning. Something fierce and primal was rising inside him.
Where others have failed, have faltered, have fallen, I will be triumphant. I am different. I am cut of a new cloth. I will rise. Call me king.
Logan smiled a fuck you through the angst and the sorrow. And he was potent. That was it. That was survival. That was the secret. That was the living flame hidden in the ashes of his burned-out heart. If only he could hold it. Aline stood before the door of the Cooper's shop, her hair covered, back bent, and foot twisted sideways in the dust. The Caladoran army had arrived yesterday, and King Garoth Ursul was rewarding his troops for their valor by allowing selected soldiers to take what they desired. It wasn't a good day to be a pretty woman on the streets of Cenaria. It had taken her 2 harrowing days to find this place. The Cooper signaled her in, gesturing to the back of the shop. Jarl was at a table covered with papers, fat sacks of money at his feet.
I found your way out. A Caladoran caravan master has agreed to take you. You'll have to lie in a compartment used to smuggle Barush tea and worse things until you get outside the gates. But it's big enough to hold you and the girl. You leave at nightfall.
You can trust the smuggler?
I can't trust anyone. He's Caladoran and you're beautiful. But because he's Caladoran, he has the best chance of getting through the gates. And he's worked with us for 20 years. I've made it in his best interest to take you safely.
You must have paid him a fortune.
Only half of one. The other half he gets when you send me word that you've made it safely.
Thank you.
It's the least I could do for Kyler. It's also the most I can do.
It's more than enough. Thank you.
The girl's downstairs. She won't leave his... She won't leave him.
He recognized this place. The white gold warmth suffused him. His flesh gloried in the light. He moved through the tunnel with sure and easy steps, eagerness without hurry. Gentle fingers closed his eyes. Regret, sorrow, darkness, cold. He blinked away the nightmare. Let the white gold light hold him again.
Grab his arm. Help me.
Cold stones slid under his back. Discomfort, pain, helplessness. Then even the cold and the jostling faded. He walked forward unsteadily in the tunnel, broke into a jog. This was where he belonged now, here, without pain. A tear splashed in his face. He stumbled and fell. He lay there, terrified, but the nightmare didn't come back. He got up to his knees, stood. At the next step, he smacked up against... nothing. He put his hands out and felt the invisible barrier. It was as cool as iron and as smooth as glass. Beyond it, the warmth increased. The white gold light beckoned him. Were those people up ahead? Something was pulling him aside, away. He felt twisted, and slowly a chamber came into focus. Not the chamber, for the chamber itself remained indistinct. It seemed full of people intensely curious to see him, but he couldn't make them out. All that was truly in focus was a man seated before him on a low throne and 2 doors. The door at his right hand was of beaten gold. Light streaked around every edge, the same warm, white gold light Kyler had just been in. The door to his left hand was plain wood with a simple iron latch. The man's face was dominated by lambent, lupin yellow eyes. He wasn't tall, but he exuded authority, potency.
What is this place?
Neither heaven nor hell. This, if you will, is the antechamber of the mystery. This is my realm.
Who are you?
It pleased Achilles to call me the Wolf.
Achilles? You mean Durzo?
Before you, there is a choice. You may proceed through one door or the other. Choose the gold, and I will release you back to where you just were. And you have my apology for interrupting your journey.
My journey?
Your journey to heaven or hell or oblivion or reincarnation or whatever it is that death holds.
Do you know?
This is the antechamber of the mystery, Azoth. You will find no answers here. Just choices. Through the wood door, you will go back to your life, your body, your time. Or nearly so. It will take a few days for your body to heal. You will be the Night Angel in truth, as Achilles was before you. Your body will be immune to the scourge of time, as Achilles was. Something that perhaps one must become old to appreciate. You will also heal at a rate beyond that of mortal men. What you call your talent will grow. You can still be killed. The difference is, you will come back. You will be a living legend.
It sounded wonderful. Too good, even. I'd be like Achilles Thorn. I'd be like Durzo. The latter thought gave him pause. The burden of immortality, however it worked, or the power of it, or sheer press of so much time, was what had turned Achilles Thorn, the prince, the hero, into Durzo Blint, the hopeless, bitter murderer. He remembered his snide remark to Durzo.
Here I thought the Night Angels were invincible.
They're immortal. It's not the same.
Why would you do this for me?
Perhaps I don't do anything at all. Perhaps it is the Kakari's work.
What's the price?
Durzo has taught you well, hasn't he?
The wolf looked almost mournful.
The truth is, I don't know. I can only tell you what I have heard from those more enlightened than I. They believed that coming back from death, as you would, was such a violation of the natural order of things that this unnatural life cost the afterlife. That for his 7 centuries of life, Achilles traded all eternity. But they might be wrong. It might have no influence on eternity whatsoever. Or there may be no eternity to influence. I'm the wrong man to ask. For I have chosen this life myself.
Kyler walked toward the golden door. It was so beautiful there. He'd had such peace. What fool would trade the eternal peace and happiness in that gold light for the blood and gore and dishonor and despair and duplicity of the life he'd led? As he stepped closer to it, the door changed. The gold melted, puddled to the ground in an instant, and a raging inferno leapt up, eager to devour Kyler.
No!
Then it was gone, and the gold door was back. Kyler shot a look at the wolf.
Eternity might not be a pleasant place for you.
You did that?
A simple illusion. But if you sat in judgment of Kyler Stern, would you give him eternal paradise?
You're not exactly disinterested in my choice, are you?
You've become a player, Night Angel. No one is disinterested in your choice.
How long Kyler stood there, he didn't know. All he knew was that if he made the wrong choice, he might have a very, very long time to regret it. The mathematical formulae were no help. They were full of infinities and zeros, with no way of knowing on which side of the equation they landed. There was no hedged bet when you might be throwing away eternity in paradise, or avoiding eternity in hell, or taking an eternal existence on earth with all its flaws, weighed against merciful oblivion. Kyler didn't have Count Drake's faith in a loving God, or Durzo's faith that there was no such God. He knew that he had done a lot of evil, by anyone's definition. He knew that he had done some good. He'd given his life for Aline. Aline. She filled his mind and his heart so utterly that it ached. If he chose life, even if she accepted him, she would grow old and die in the smallest fraction of his life. The odds were that she never would accept him, never could. All the ifs and maybes rose and fell in great towers of foundationless suppositions. But Aline remained. Kyler loved her. He had always loved her. Aline was the risk he would take every time. He made his choice and ran toward the plain door.
Ah!
Suddenly, he jerked upright. Kyla ripped open his blood-encrusted tunic. His chest was smooth, the skin perfect. He touched his demolished shoulder. It was whole, as healthy as the fingers of his right hand. There wasn't a scar on his body. He sat there blinking, not even glancing at Yuli or Aline, who were frozen, staring at him.
I'm alive! I'm alive?
Yes, Kyler.
Mama Kay came into the room. Her calm was surreal. Kyler sat stupidly for a moment. It had all been real.
Unbelievable. Kyler, one who kills and is killed. Durzo knew all along.
Yuli seemed to take her cue from the calm Kyler and Mama Kay were showing, seemed to be fine with Kyler sitting up and talking when he'd been dead a moment before. Aline was not doing as well. She stood up abruptly and walked out the door.
Aline, wait! Wait. Just tell me one thing.
Aline stopped and looked at him, confused, terrified, and hopeful at the same time, her eyes full of tears.
Who was it who gave you those scars? It wasn't Durzo, was it? It was Rat, right?
You came back from the dead to ask me that? Of course it was Rat.
Wait, Aline. I'm sorry.
Kyla tried to move, but it seemed he'd used up all his strength to sit up. She was gone.
Wait. What the hell am I sorry about?
Yuli looked at Kyla accusingly.
You aren't going to let her go, are you?
Kyler held on to the edge of the bed like a lifeline. He looked at Yuli and raised a hand helplessly and had to quickly put it down to keep from falling over.
How can I stop her?
Yuli stomped her foot and stormed out of the room. Mama Kay's laughter was different laughter than he'd heard from her before. Deeper, fuller, truly happy. As if with the same act of will that had made her choose life, she'd set aside her cynicism.
I know what you're thinking, Kyla. Durzo lied to you when he told you he'd hurt Aline. Of course he did. It was the only way he could save you. You had to kill him to succeed him. The Kakari couldn't complete the bond until its former master died.
They sat there in silence, Kyler thinking of how Durzo's death cast his life in a completely different light. It was disconcerting to think how wrong he'd been about his master, thinking him so hateful, actually believing Durzo was capable of mutilating Doll Girl. But Kyler liked the picture that was emerging. Durzo Blint, the legend, had been a Kalis Thorn, the hero. Kyler wondered how many other heroes' names his master had worn. He felt a stabbing pain, an emptiness in his stomach, a surge toward tears that he suppressed.
I'm going to miss him.
Me too. But it's going to be all right. I don't know why, but I really believe that.
So you decided to live.
And so did you. She loves you, Kyla. Whether she realizes it or not, she dragged you out of the castle by herself. She refused to leave you.
She's furious with me.
Furious the way a woman in love gets.
Have you told Yuli who her mother is?
No, and I never will. I won't raise her into this.
She needs a family.
I was hoping you and Aline would be interested in the job.
Night came to the east shore of the Plith River in a smothering cloud. The city had been burning all day, and the night winds wafted the smell over the entire city. Fires reflected in the Plith, and low-hanging clouds held the ashy air like a pillow against the face of the city. A wagon clattered down a street, its driver hunched, face muffled against the malodorous air. He overtook a crippled woman with a bent back and a foot turned sideways.
Want up?
The woman turned expectantly. Her face, too, was muffled, but her eyes were young, though both eyes had been blackened. Her Caladoran driver was supposed to be dark-haired and fat. This man was white-haired, lean as a rail, stooped, and almost lost in his clothes. She shook her head and turned away.
Please, Aline.
I should be scared of you, shouldn't I?
I'd never hurt you.
Eyebrows above the eyes he'd blackened lifted incredulously.
Well, not really hurt you.
What are you doing?
I'd like to take you away from here. You and Yuli both. We can go anywhere. I'm going to pick her up next.
Why me, Kyla?
It's always been you.
Don't say you love me. How could you love this?
Aline jerked the scarf down and pointed at her scars.
How could you love a freak?
I don't love your scars, Aline. I hate them.
And you'll never see past that.
I'm not finished, Aline. I've watched over you since we were children. For a long time, you're right, I couldn't see past your scars. I'm not going to give you some crap that they're beautiful. Your scars are ugly, but you aren't, Aline. The woman I see when I look at you is amazing. She's smart, she's got a quick tongue, and she's got such a heart that it makes me believe that people can be good despite all I've seen to the contrary for my whole life.
How can you say that? You don't know me!
Aren't you still Doll Girl?
Yes, but I don't think you're still Azoth.
No, I'm not. I don't know who I am. Right now, I only know I'm not my master, and I won't live like he did.
Kyla, I will always be grateful to you, but we would be a disaster. You would destroy me.
What are you talking about?
Mama Kay said your master intercepted all my letters.
Yes, but I've had a busy afternoon catching up.
And you still don't understand? When we were children, you were the one who protected me, who looked out for me. You were the one who put me with a real family. I wanted to be with you forever. Then, when I was growing up, you were my benefactor who made me special. You were my secret young lord, whom I loved so desperately and so foolishly. You were my Kyla, my poor nobleman that the Drake girls told me stories about.
You say that like it's a bad thing.
Oh, Kyla, what happens to that silly girl when it turns out I'm not good enough for the man I've loved my whole life?
You not good enough?
It's a fairy tale, Kyla. I don't deserve it. Something will happen. You'll find somebody prettier, or you'll get tired of me. And then you'll leave me, and I'll never recover. Because the only kind of love I have to offer is stupid and blind and so deep and powerful that I feel like I'm cracking just to hold it in. I can't just swoon and fall into bed with you. Because you'll hop right out and get on with your life. And I never will.
I'm not asking you to make love with me.
So I'm too ugly?
Enough! I think you're the most beautiful woman I've ever seen, Aline. And the purest and the best, but I'm not asking you to fuck!
Consternation played over her features, but she obviously didn't like being yelled at.
Aline, I'm sorry I yelled. I'm sorry I hit you, even if it was to save you. I've thought I was dying twice in the last few days. Maybe I did die. I don't know. What I do know is that when I thought I was dying, you were my regret. No, not your scars. I regretted that I hadn't turned myself into the kind of man that you could be with. That it wouldn't be just for me to be with you, even if you wanted me. Our lives started in the same shithole, Aline. But somehow, you've turned into you and I've turned into this. I don't like what I've done. I don't like who I've become. You don't deserve a fairy tale? I don't deserve another chance, but I'm asking you for one. You're afraid that love is too risky? I've seen what happens when you don't risk it. Mama Kay and my master loved each other, but they were too afraid to risk it, and that destroyed them. We risk everything either way. I'm willing to risk it to see the world through your eyes, Aline. I want to know you. I want to be worthy of you. I want to look in the mirror and like who I see. I don't know what's next, but I know I want to face it with you. Aline, I'm not asking you to fuck. But maybe someday I'll earn the right to ask you for something more permanent.
Kyla turned, and facing her was harder than facing 30 Highlanders. He extended his hand.
Please, Aline, will you come with me?
Aline scowled fiercely at him, then looked away. Her eyes were shiny with tears, but it could have been from all the ash in the air. She blinked quickly before looking back up at him. She searched his face for a long moment. He met her big brown eyes. He had turned away from them so many times, afraid she would see what he really was. He had turned away, afraid that she couldn't bear the sight of his filth. Now, he met that gaze. He opened himself to it. He didn't hide his darkness. He didn't hide his love. He let her gaze go all the way through him. To his wonder, her eyes filled with something softer than justice, something warmer than mercy.
I'm so scared, Kyla.
Me too.
She took his hand. The Night Angel Trilogy, The Way of Shadows Part 2, is a Graphic Audio production. Copyright 2008, Brent Weeks. Published by arrangement with Hatchet Book Group Incorporated. All rights reserved. Production copyright 2010 by The Cutting Corporation Incorporated. All rights reserved. With performances by David Coyne, Eric Messner, Ren Casey, Ken Jackson, Christopher Graybill, Michael Glenn, Terrence Azelford, Tim Getman, Elizabeth Jernigan, Richard Rowan, Colleen Delaney, Johann Detweiler, Tony Penny, Joe Brack, Casey Platt, Nanette Savard, Lily Beacon, Laura Quinn Anderson, Mort Shelby, James Lewis, Scott McCormick, and Yasmin Toison. Adapted and directed by Johann Detweiler. Produced by Richard Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Johann Detweiler. Featuring original music composed and performed by Dan Smith and Johann Detweiler. If you enjoyed the Night Angel trilogy, be sure to look for R.A. Salvatore's Demon Wars Saga, available now in graphic audio at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net. Keep listening for exciting previews of other graphic audio material.
You are Amanda Carter.
You are Anver Bajraktari. Do you have the items we discussed?
Come inside.
What's a Greek coin doing here? I thought these artifacts were Nepali. What the hell do you think you're doing?
There has been a change of plans.
I am Sergeant Panteras Kathramados, and you are under arrest for trafficking in illicit antiquities.
Don't take me in yet. I was hired by the Japan Buddhist Federation to figure out why Greek coins are turning up in plunder from a Buddhist shrine in Nepal.
I accept your story, for now. But I shall keep an eye on you, Anya Creed.
It is said that shortly after Gotama's death, one of his disciples decided to exalt the Enlightened One in the heights of the world. The shrine could only be found by a quest. This is your path, Anya Creed. It is the road you must follow to find that which you seek.
We bring you news from our places, comrade. First, a meddling American woman named Anya Creed caused us to lose our last shipment to the Greek police. The good news is that the witch has come to Nepal.
How is it good news that this meddlesome Western woman has come here?
Because she's on the trail of the greatest treasure trove in the Himalayas. All we have to do is follow her, and she'll lead us to unimaginable wealth.
Press up. How much further?
Not far. Another hour or two.
That may be too long. They're getting close.
Storm clouds ahead. We shall be in it soon.
We have to keep moving!
There it is.
pull back. We should check out the cave.
Oh my God.
I cannot let you tell the world of this. I'll die first.
You're right about one thing. You will die.
You have given me a very great deal of trouble, Miss Creed. I am about to shoot you in the belly.
Rogue Angel 19, Seeker's Curse. In graphic audio.
Do you know your name?
Kailara Vada.
And do you know where you are?
You're the mercenaries.
Yes.
When can I get back to my ship?
After the Major talks to you, probably.
Captain Vada, we have a problem. We need a place to stash some neutral civilians. Your ship is more than adequate for that task.
Have you ever been in charge of a refugee situation?
No. You have suggestions?
The captains of the other Civ ships are going to think they should be running this. You have to convince them otherwise.
We want to talk to you.
This is ridiculous!
Ah, you get us killed!
Come on!
You're exceeding your authority!
Enough! I'm lucky to be alive, and so are you. Don't push your luck.
You know, from inside those cargo holds, they don't have far to go to access the linkages with hardware.
If they wanted to mess us up, they could.
I was afraid of that.
Drive just came on, Captain. Full boost. I can't get it off.
And I can't get anywhere with the nav board.
It's time to let more experienced officers take over.
Don't do it, Kai!
Gary?
Don't let him get the ship!
Let him go.
Hand us your captain's wallet. Then we'll see.
Vata's War. Book 1. Trading in Danger. Part 2. In graphic audio.
What miserable wretches we mortals be, to build our homes in sheltered lee.
I tried to keep him out.
Keep me out, indeed! I will raise your walls if ever I find the doors closed to me again!
The abbey is closed.
And the streets are full of dying people!
What wretched souls we mortals be, to bask in false epiphany, to see a light so clear, so true, to save us from the fate we rue.
The hour of our glory is upon us! Let us go to them, our flock, and lead them against the heretics! They are responsible for this sickness! Their sacrilege has brought the vengeance of God upon us all! Unseat them and he will be contented! And the plague will lift from our lands and our home! Kill them! Kill all of them!
Deny the truth before our sight, that worms invade eternal night, that maggots feed within the skin, a faithful pure devoid of sin.
Back away! Get away from me! Please! Get away!
So tell me not of eternal soul that flees my coil through worm-bit hole. For when I die, what is left of me? A whisper lost to eternity.
Don't miss the epic conclusion to the fourth book in the Demon War saga, Mortalis Part 3. Available now in graphic audio.
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net. where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220 or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different graphic audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets that include 5 books of a series. Available only
at www.graphicaudio.net.